Hello, Cannabis Business Minds, and hope you're doing well. This is your podcast host, Simone, and coming to you from the south of France, confined and all. We have such a great episode with a brilliant mind. Kim Stock was the first ever cannabis enforcement agent, now turned consultant, in the world. Yes, she worked in the state of Colorado and really saw the entire transition from no regulation in 2012 to actual regulation within kind of the several years passing. On this podcast episode, she drops so much knowledge about compliance that I thought I was pretty aware of that I really, really got schooled in. So I want you guys to definitely take out that notebook and really focus on really the things that she's saying. You know, she basically says, in a nutshell, the cannabis compliance regulation that we have currently in regulated states isn't going to be like anything when it's federally legal. All right, that's a pretty big statement and a pretty bold one, but something that I completely agree with. You know, I've always been focused on the compliance that you need to do to operate a business efficiently, right? Business process improvement, internal controls, making sure that you're complying with the inventory regulations, the seed to sale tracking regulations, all that kind of numbers and business stuff. But guys, there's so much more, obviously, to cannabis compliance and regulation. And so she touches a lot on food safety, consumer safety, and all of the things that, you know, you'd want to be making sure that you're focused on with OSHA and the FDA when it comes into play. All right, so I hope that you guys get some valuable, valuable nuggets out of this podcast. Make sure that you leave me a message because, guys, there are some major updates on Cannabis Business Minds. So check out the new website. Can't wait to get your feedback. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this show. Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds, the podcast that will help you navigate the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. But your background is so impressive. I didn't realize that you were like the first ever, and I keep calling him a compliance consultant because now that's you're doing consulting, but you were the first ever appointed in, were you an enforcement officer or like the first ever in, and you said in the nation, but then I was like, but really in the world?
I mean, that is possible. But no, I mean, so the thing is with the health department. So I worked as a restaurant health inspector.
Okay.
That's how it all started.
Okay.
For Denver, Colorado. So that was like the first, you know, Colorado was the first place that became legal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a department, the health department itself, that was kind of, cannabis was kind of shoved on them. And they were just like, we need to do something about this. We know nothing about this. Do something. And so all the restaurant health inspectors were now tasked with going out and investigating these facilities that they had never been into. They knew absolutely nothing about cannabis. It was a really weird place to be at that time. Like, honestly, like I was like, what is even going on? I don't know anything about this plant. I don't know anything about the products. Extraction was like, it was like Breaking Bad to me. Like I just had no idea that people even needed to extract. Like I thought it was just a plant and you just smoked it.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Colorado, so I knew, you know, enough about it. And so it was funny, you know, it was weird. And then it got bigger and bigger and more licenses. And we found a lot of issues with cannabis when it comes to food safety and public health that didn't exist with our other industries, right? Mm-hmm. Pesticide usage, heavy metal issues, molds, you know, like just crazy stuff that we ran into. Also, you know, all the different items that they were selling, you know, suppositories and tampons and nasal sprays and eye drops and, you know, things that we weren't used to seeing with, you know, there aren't like, I don't know, like flower makers that decide that they're going to make eye drops and suppositories. Like it's just not, you know, it was the first industry to do that kind of stuff. And we had to figure out how to regulate it. And so after a little while, you know, they kind of were like, we need someone to just do this. And this is their full-time job is cannabis. And I just so happened to, you know, be granted that job, that given that job. It was a great opportunity and I was super happy to take it. And I don't know. And we had a team and then, you know, so it kind of molded from there. So, it was interesting.
How incredible though, because at that point, I mean, because Colorado legalized in 2012, but there had been medical. And so was there no true kind of, was it a similar kind of path to Oregon and California where medical passed way before adult use? So it was quote unquote regulated, but there were no rules and regulations for businesses to kind of follow. And adult use is what kind of like sparked the movement of getting in from the health department and starting kind of the regulatory body.
Yeah, you're totally right. So 2012 was when it actually got legalized. But you know, nobody was granted licenses until like late 2013, you know, cause they gave a little bit of time. And it had been decriminalized forever. I mean, it was Colorado. I feel like nobody cared that much. And then I think that medical was open for a couple of years and medical was just completely unregulated. So the MED was going in, I believe, but no health departments. They hadn't even started touching it yet. And you know, that's just the way it was. Like it was a small amount of people, you know, you had to get a card. And all this stuff, and the public health risk was a lot smaller at that point. And I think that's why they just didn't go in. But once recreational became legal, I mean, we had, you know, I think I had 2,800 different licenses, different facilities in just Denver alone. And that's a lot. That's like, that's for a small area. I mean, Denver's huge, but you know what I mean? Like that's the most per capita in all of Colorado. And, you know, if there was an outbreak or something bad that happened, it would just be, you know, devastating, you know, and also, you know, everyone, believe it or not, everyone that I worked with in the government was very pro cannabis. They really felt like there were a lot of really good things about it and that it should be legal. And so, you know, they didn't want something to happen that would cause an industry black eye that would maybe stop other states from, you know, starting or you know, whatever. So they were very like pro cannabis. It was kind of interesting. Like it wasn't what I really expected, but
well,
yeah, they were
so good. I feel like Colorado really has kind of set the example when you look at a lot of states of, you know, Washington and California with a crippling tax code. You know, it seems like you think about Colorado and just from the excise tax perspective and just, I don't know, you don't see a lot of news where it seems like a lot of things have gone wrong in Colorado, which is maybe from an outsider's perspective, I suppose, and not being on the regulatory side. But how did your organization, when you were on that side, you know, there must have been like tremendous amounts of someone had to take kind of that leadership role, a lot of discovery, you know, how was that process of just, I guess, learning from something you literally had to go from a restaurant, right, to what you knew had to be, you know, there to, okay, all of a sudden there's all of these different kinds of products. So I'm curious, were there like product restrictions at one point to like making sure that you're safe, that you guys feel safe for the public to actually be able to consume? Like how, I'm sure you could write a book about that, but like, how was that?
Yeah, I have a couple of people trying to get me to write a book about it, and I don't know if I have the time because we're so busy. I mean, so it was insane. Everyone jokes about it being the Wild West now, and it's compared to what we saw in the beginning, it is vastly better, so much better. Because people are more used to being regulated. So when we went in, I mean, we were literally knocking on doors and just coming in. And people had never seen us before. They had no idea what department we were with. They didn't realize that they were going to be regulated by a health department. And many of the people immediately we would close, mostly because of health issues, major health issues, such as not enough hand sinks in the facility or not having hot water in the facility. You know, if you're making edibles or making whatever, or having, you know, equipment that isn't so great, or, you know, unsafe work conditions, not, you know, hood ventilation and things like that in extraction labs. So what we really did was I just went into as many places as possible right away. And, instead of being an enforcement officer, I just wanted to talk to them. Mm-hmm. And so I essentially learned, I mean, the industry essentially taught me everything I knew, because I knew I wasn't going to get that education from anyone in the government. We were the first. Yeah. We would call the FDA and they would hang up on us when we mentioned cannabis. They would not talk to us about it. They wouldn't give us any guidance on it. So it was very, very hard. And we really relied on the industry, which I thought was very cool. And you know, so we learned every extraction that there was out that was under the sun in Denver, and all the weird stuff that we didn't know anything about, and had them just walk us through it. And then from there, we identified where critical control points were. A lot of, you know, food safety, it's an interesting science. Mm-hmm. You really have to look at a full process and be able to identify where things can go wrong, mm-hmm. and then go from there. And we found a lot of really strange things, like cannabis plants, just for instance, you know, with a berry plant, like let's mm-hmm. say strawberries or something, which is very similar, you know, to cannabis, believe it or not, in the way that we have to like handle things. But you can take those berries home and wash them before you eat them. Right? So you're allowed to use harsher pesticides with them because you're planning on washing them. With cannabis, you can't take your bud home and wash it and then consume it. Like that's just not going to happen. Right. And I literally had to explain this to like FDA officers, like, well, why can't you just wash it? Whoa. You're getting rid of the entire point of the plant. You know, you can't just like wash the cannabis plant. So it has to be handled and grown in a very different way. And you know, the pesticides that were used, that was a huge deal in Denver. I don't know if you read anything about that, but we did a lot of different recalls and disposals because of that, because people were using pesticides that are very harsh and very dangerous, you know, carcinogenic pesticides that people have been using in their basement in small quantities for a long time. But on a grander scale, There's more mold and there's more pests and more issues. So people were using it a whole lot more. And it was really dangerous. And when you concentrate that, I mean, I was finding concentrates that were 56% microbutanol, which is, you know, really dangerous chemical. And that's more chemical than THC, you know?
And were the business owners even aware of that? I mean, it seems like there's like a concept of just complete neglect, right? And then miseducation. Where was that? And I'm sure there's, you know, extremes to both, but where would the median kind of lie?
Well, if you're growing five, you know, plants in your basement and you have to spray them once with microbutanol to get rid of a PM problem, You know, and then they grow through flower and stuff without using any of it. I mean, it's a systemic poison, so it's still in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you move to a, you know, 4,000 plant facility, that's the only way you know how to get rid of something. And in a 4,000 plant facility, especially if it's not built correctly, which we run into all the time, it, you know, they're going to just spray that shit all the time because they don't know what else to do. I think some of them knew that it was poisonous. They just didn't know how poisonous it was. Because it has warnings all over the label. Like it's, you know, clearly not used for, you know, certain things, mostly ornamental plants like Christmas trees and things like that is what it's used for. And, you know, I don't think anybody was being malicious. There were a few people that were very malicious with it that we caught. But, you know, for the most part, I think that's why I really fell in love with the industry. Yeah. The people in the industry are really great. 90% of them are trying to do the best that they can. I wouldn't even be in business if people in this industry weren't good. Yeah. Because all the things that we regulate aren't necessarily required at this very moment.
Federal level.
They will be very
soon. Yeah. Well, let's go. I wanted to get into this because this is kind of like when you kind of, the offline thing of like you mentioned, you know, we right now compliance is easy and it's not going to be like it is when it's kind of federally legal. I'm curious about that. Maybe we kind of have to pin that because I think that's a little bit down the road on the conversation. But I was shocked actually to see that because I think, because I worked in regulation much more from the finance and kind of anti-fraud and much more of like the money regulation, and getting into this space, I thought to myself, and I had done one biopharmaceutical company before getting into cannabis, I thought to myself, oh my God, it's insane that these startup businesses have to have the not only the capital, but the compliance wherewithal to be mm-hmm. successful in this space. And I believe that it's like one of the most regulated industries right now, but am I wrong?
I think so. People complain about being like so regulated, and I'm like, okay, you have, you know, in Colorado, you have the MED.
Yeah.
Yes. But they haven't done a regular inspection in quite some time. You know, they're really low, understaffed. And that's the same with in Oregon, you know, OLCC. I have clients out here that I do audits for that have never even seen an OLCC officer. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, oh, we're so regulated. And I'm like, you just wait until federal comes, because, you know, the FDA and OSHA, you know, those are the two main things that my company deals with.
Yeah.
Those are huge. You know, they can close you immediately. They can fine you incredibly high amounts, put people out of business. And I think that people don't really realize that wholesale food manufacturers are actually regulated more than they are. You know, once it all happens, then they'll have more regulatory bodies.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like the state cannabis regulations that we work with, which is, you know, every state essentially, those are our easiest set of regulations to follow, because explaining to someone why they need a sign is a lot easier than, you know, explaining to someone why they need a heat step in their oil because of botulism. You know, like it's a lot harder for them to wrap their mind around and understand, you know, why you have to change your gloves so often, why you have to wash your hands so often, why you have to, I don't know. It's a little harder to explain to people. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to evaluate, because without some kind of microbiology background or regulator background, mm-hmm. You're not going to even notice, you know, what's happening. And if you don't have a cannabis background, mm-hmm. you're going to miss a whole lot of stuff too, because you don't even understand what's happening in the facility, which we've run into. There, you know, are other people that come into this industry and they've got a food safety background, and they're like, oh, I'm going to start a consulting firm. Yeah. And they don't last very long because they don't even understand what extraction is, or where, you know, what issues that health departments have run into. And thankfully, with our extensive background in it, yeah. and, you know, writing regulations for public health authorities, I mean, that puts us in a really unique spot.
Oh, it puts you in like such an amazing spot to, I guess, help. I mean, it's interesting because we've talked about extraction and manufacturers the most. Is that, and when you think about the supply chain, cultivation, extractors, and manufacturers, is that where you see most of the risk, I guess, is that who you're serving based upon your background and working with OSHA and kind of making sure that you can understand OSHA compliance and FDA compliance? Are those the major players that you're helping in the supply chain?
So when it comes to OSHA, actually our grows are really big. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of risk. It's because OSHA is all about worker safety.
Okay.
So if you're on ladders, if you're bending over and picking up pots all day long, if there's water on the ground and you can trip over something and fall and hurt yourself, more people get hurt at grows than any of our other clients. It's trimmers, believe it or not, trimmers will cut themselves constantly. It's like a thing, you know, and they have to report that kind of stuff, or at least, you know, keep documentation about it and have policies and what to do in an emergency and things like that. And that's just like normal, and for every industry. And so people are like, oh, you know, we're not getting on board with OSHA. And I'm like, you realize if you don't do this one thing that takes 5 seconds, you know, it's $10,000 a person fine for, you know, like I have to explain to them how much they can find, because without knowing that, they kind of don't think it's a big deal. Wow. Worker safety, the United States really cares about worker safety. Yeah. So our grows is really, I mean, both grows and extraction facilities. Yeah. I mean, those are all, there's risk with both, but we work with grows a lot with that. When it becomes to FDA regulation, I'm getting dark again. It's like dark outside. That's why this is
happening. Oregon. It's not sunny. Not yet. Not until the summer.
Right. Once it's 8 a.m., it'll lighten up a little bit.
I know. Holler at you for the 7 a.m. Thank you.
I'm usually up at this time, honestly. But but yeah, so with the FDA, though, they're food safety. So they're going to be dealing with extractions, believe it or not. Extracts, they are treating all extraction labs as a food facility because you never really know what they're going to use that extract for. And they're going to apply those regulations to the extraction facility in case they decide they want to start selling edible oil, or maybe they'll register differently or something like that. But fire code as well. We do fire code. Extraction is really huge when it comes to fire code. Same with grows. But the FDA mostly is going to be in the manufacturing side. And I feel like we have a really big mix. We even have some clients that are just solely dispensaries.
Yeah.
And worried about the state regulations, you know, and then handling regulations. FDA, once something leaves a facility, the FDA still has jurisdiction over it. So if your bud tenders are not handling the product in a safe, correct way, as we're seeing with all this coronavirus stuff, I mean, it's actually like it's a terrible thing, but it's a really interesting time because this is all the stuff that the government has trained me and my team for. And now it's like, oh, it's actually happening. So people in dispensaries are starting to realize what cross-contamination is, why it's important not to touch the bud with your bare hands all the time. You know, things that we've been preaching for a really long time, but yet, you know, but now
there wasn't that, I guess, trigger point for someone to realize because they haven't had an audit, they haven't had any fines, right? They haven't had adequate training, I think, from kind of just the state rollout to getting the license. Wow, that's incredible. And interesting because I think that most people, when they think FDA in the cannabis industry, they think about label claims. They think about, oh, I can't, you know, misrepresent everything that cannabis and CBD can do because I think that's what the news says, right? But I think that's a really important thing that you just highlighted was that it's much more than label claims. It's how everything is handled.
So the label claims are just low-hanging fruit. So it's very black and white to say this is a claim and this isn't. And that's the only way the FDA is really getting into places or see, you know, that's kind of, they've learned that that's their jurisdiction for sure. But there are no regulations yet. That's the only one that is like a solid regulation throughout all products. You can't make claims. I mean, it is super, super illegal and people do it all the time. And so the FDA is like, well, we can at least enforce this for now. It's going to be a whole, if you think that they're tough on that, wait until they come into your facility because that's what, you know, there's so many other things. And I, you know, FDA regulations are online. 111, 117 is kind of the area that you would look for supplements in food. They're just going to take those regulations, apply it to cannabis, and then they're going to have a chapter with some nuances, which is going to be like testing standards. They're going to make everybody test their cannabis, of course, and probably heat steps for botulism and things like that. Like in washing procedures, you know, because they can't wash the plant. So they're going to have a way that the farmer has to treat the plant in order for it to be okay not to be washed. Things like that, that are going to be hopefully very black and white, but knowing the FDA, it'll probably be very gray. And we'll just, you know, interpret and try to work with our clients from there. I mean, that's just what it is. Yeah.
Do audits in your space work this way, where there's the low-hanging fruit, but then that triggers further investigation, a review of another document, and then the fines can kind of increase and increase and increase when the audit, like the audit scope necessarily, if you're investigated, this is just from what I used to do. Like you have an audit kind of a scope. You find something that's a little bit alarming. Then you start digging a little bit more. You find something else, right? And so you can kind of, it leads down a big, massive rabbit hole of audit findings that could, you know, depending on who you're auditing, impact them if it's an internal audit for the best, but if it's an external audit, severe fines. Is this how the FDA and OSHA also work?
So they do on-site. So right now, OSHA is only going into facilities that have a complaint.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't have the manpower to start going into facilities for any other reason. Also, THC companies are outside of their jurisdiction at this time. Mm-hmm. CBD and other cannabinoid companies are in their jurisdiction right now because most of that comes from industrial hemp. So it is that way to the point where, you know, the FDA will do an on-site audit. They'll walk the facility. They're talking. They'll probably find a few things. If they find something that, you know, could potentially be an issue, that's the thing is there's a lot of if this, then that. Yes. And then it does. It leads you down a rabbit hole. And usually if you find one thing that's in this area or, you know, under this category, if you dig deep enough, you can find a whole lot of other things. So, you know, having that food safety knowledge, at least a little bit. I mean, we do FDA audits all the time. And we come in and people are like shocked. They're like, we didn't even know about that. And I'm like, I know, because you're not a food safety expert. Like, you're, this is not normal stuff that everybody just knows.
No.
You know, and it's kind of enlightening. Like, it's like, man, you know, because to me, it's just common sense because I've been doing this my entire career. Yeah. But, you know, for the average person, they don't know what they're supposed to be looking for or why they need to have the ceiling made a certain way or, you know, things like that. And it's really interesting. And really, I love education.
Yeah.
I speak at 3 different conferences a month on average. I, you know, I love going out and going on site. And, you know, mostly my consultants do all the on-site work nowadays. I just run the company. And so I love when I get to do an audit because it's just like, oh, this is what I loved about it.
Stuff.
Yeah, I miss it. But the education part is really important. When we do it, the FDA does an audit, they go in and they just do it and they don't really talk about it. They just look for stuff and then dig and ask you a bunch of questions. And it's really uncomfortable because you just don't know what they're really asking for. With us coming in, we ask questions and then we explain why we ask that question. And then we explain why they need to be doing it a certain way. And then we help them change that or, you know, get training or change their SOPs or whatever needs to happen to make sure that, you know, they're doing well. So I don't know. It depends on who's auditing you.
Yes,
they're a lot nicer. Yeah.
I would think it's better to have like a friendly auditor or like services like you, where it's like theoretically it's an internal audit to make sure that you've identified all of the risks and that you're mitigating the risk and that you're in compliance. And I think that many business owners just don't have I think they've spent so much money trying to get the license, trying to get started up, right? They might not have had the guidance from the state regulatory bodies of like, hey, these are all the things that you need to do. You know, yeah. I read that the average cannabis business spends $200,000 on startup costs for compliance.
Yeah.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. And then $80,000 recurring. And in my mind, that makes sense. And I literally am only looking at it from an internal operate, like all of the business processes compliance that needs to happen. So I don't even look at it until now, really through your eyes or your lens of, you know, OSHA and FDA, which just adds a huge other layer. That's to me, the layer that will put a business truly out of business. If you fail those audits, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an issue. They have a lot of teeth in their regulations and a lot of fining power. And, you know, I would say most of the places that I go into, if they're not regulated by a local health department, mm-hmm. they're not regulated at all when it comes to food safety. And mm-hmm. so it's really interesting. There are so many times that I walk in and go, I just want to tell you right now, that if I were an FDA agent, I would be closing you because of this right now. And it's like that moment of like, oh God. And I'm like, it's okay. We can fix this. Because the thing is that, you know, you say, oh, not a lot of guidance from, you know, the FDA or whoever's being even local health departments.
Yeah.
No, they're not giving guidance. They can't technically.
Oh,
the problem is, yeah. And this is one of the reasons why I started my consulting firm. I remember I was in we had to go to hearings and stuff all the time. I'd been to court a million times. and I remember being in a hearing with this guy and it was over hot water or something like that. It was, you know, a simple thing that they could have done, that probably could have cost him $7. But because I'm a regulator, I'm speaking for the government. So I have liability that I am not allowed to give them any advice or give them options. It is, the onus is on them to understand the regulations, and the onus is on them to fix these issues. All I do is state the regulation. That's the regulation that you're in violation of, and you need to come into compliance. End of story. You aren't allowed to go, but all you have to really do is add this little knob and adjust it under here. Like, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
If they give them the wrong advice, they can sue the city or the state or whoever they work for. And so you really are not allowed to do that. Yeah. As a consultant, that is your job, is to give them these options. Like, well, here are your three options. This is how much each one of them is going to cost you about. I suggest this because it's the easiest. We can try it, see what happens. If it doesn't work, we can find a different solution. Yeah. You know, and we have really great insurance. And, you know, like, we just, that's the way that consultants work. Yeah. We are allowed to give them advice.
We're solution oriented, where the government is just really focused on making sure there's compliance with rules and regulation. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
It's
so interesting. I don't know. It just cracks me up. It cracks me up because I was in that position for so long.
Yes.
It was like my hands were tied all the time. And it was very frustrating because I loved these people and I just wanted to help them so bad. Yes. And I couldn't, I wasn't allowed to.
Is that the tipping point then for you? We're like, I'm curious if you could walk us through. So you've obviously developed this massive expertise, you know your stuff. You miss it, it seems like, a little bit doing an audit, right? But you got to see this beautiful industry grow, the first, I believe, of the world, enforcement agent. And then you decide to start your consulting company. But what made you decide it? What year was this? You know, what was that kind of, talk to us a little bit about kind of that transition.
Well, I, early on, when I started doing the, I would like joke about, oh, I'm just going to start my own consulting company. And, you know, it was like a joke. I didn't really want to do it. I actually really loved my job. I actually cried when I gave my like resignation. Like, I was like, I love you guys. I'm so sorry.
They're like, you don't have to leave. You're like,
yeah, I know. But, actually that hearing that I was just talking about with that gentleman, he was a great business owner. He was a great person. And I absolutely loved, you know, working with him. And here he was like crying in a hearing because I had fined him thousands and thousands of dollars that he couldn't afford, all because of one small issue that was easily fixed. And I thought, there, this is broken. There is something wrong here. And I was talking, you know, I was like, is there any other way we can do this? And they're like, listen, this is the way it works. This is liability. We can't have you, you know, you can't give advice. You can't tell people what to do. And I was like, okay, well, who can? And I kind of started to like research it. And it's like, no, that's why consultants exist. If government regulators would just educate people and tell them exactly what they're supposed to do, we wouldn't need to exist because those regulators would be doing that for us. But because of the liability and all of that, they don't. And that's why regulator or why consultants exist. So then I looked into it a little more and made a business plan and figured it out. And then went in to, you know, my bosses and was like, listen, guys, this is what I really want to do. You know, I'm so sorry if you want to fire me on the spot, like, go for it. I understand. But you know, I put in my two weeks and, they actually were like, no, this is really great. Cause there wasn't anybody at the time in this space. I had zero competition. Yeah. There was nobody that knew anything about cannabis food safety. There was nobody that was like helping people, you know, the way that we are now. And I was just like, this is dumb for me to pass this up. You know, you're only young once, you might as well try it. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And we've been in business ever since. And you know, now we have a team and it's awesome. And I still get to do audits every once in a while.
I think every once in a while. I think the most important thing though is when you're, you know, I guess what's your vision for your company before I kind of get into kind of my thought, like what is your vision?
Well, we're already functioning in about 16 states now because that's all that, you know, is legal. And we would work in every state because FDA and OSHA and fire code, you know, international fire code, that's the entire United States. Mm-hmm. We also now just started doing GMP certification and ISO certification in the industry, which was not allowed for a very long time until about like 6 or 7 months ago, eight months ago, maybe now. Yeah. So we work with 4 certifying bodies that will do that. And we come in and we kind of handhold and write all your documentation and train all your people and get you there. So that's kind of the newest step. Also, you know, we've had the Denver office since the beginning, and I just moved to Oregon and started the Oregon office out here. So now I'm doing a few more audits. I actually love it because I'm like, great, I get to like go do audits and stuff now again. And so, yeah, I mean, really we're just, you know, trying to expand, not super, super fast, especially with all this coronavirus stuff. We're kind of like, it's okay. We don't have to hire anyone right now. Like, we've got our clients, they're long-term clients. All of our clients are on retainer, that many have been with us for years. And you know, we just want to be able to support them through this hard time. But yeah, I mean, we're looking to expand. I don't ever want another job ever again. Like, I want this to be my career forever. And I, you know, I love what I do. And I think that my team feels the same. I hope that they want to stay with me for a long time too, because they're amazing. And I think that, you know, the bigger we get, you know, I don't want to get too huge, but the bigger we get, you know, the more expertise we can bring in and just help as many people as possible. Because right now the hemp side is really big because that FDA legalization, the USDA just wrote their stuff. The FDA legalization is coming on board, and people are going to be very, very confused because the CBD side, nobody is regulating them. There is no MED.
Like, I guess that's my big confusion, because you say, like, California allows for CBD products, but then they don't really. And so I'm curious, like, in Oregon and Colorado, can you find CBD hemp-derived products in dispensaries? Like, there's such a misconception, and there's no clarity at all in any of this, that it drives you bonkers.
Yeah, yeah. So in Oregon and in Colorado, they can sell CBD products. And you can sell them at head shops. And I mean, in Oregon, there's like whole CBD stores, like superstores that, like, yeah, it's crazy.
Like in the mall.
Oregon, actually, huh?
Like in the mall, I've seen like several CBD shops. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah. So they're just not regulated right now. So they don't have an MED or a BCC or an OLCC. Like, they just don't have that yet. The good thing about Oregon is they've got their Department of Agriculture. Mm. That's their health department. So the Department of Agriculture is their food safety. Oh, wow. Which is really interesting to me, because a lot of states don't do it that way. But yeah, I mean, so they're a little more regulated, but then the THC cannabis isn't regulated at all by a public health authority. Yeah. So it's kind of a weird, there's all these little niches where some people are regulated and some people aren't, or maybe they're not very harshly regulated, because FDA regulations are very strict. Denver department actually is known as one of the strictest health departments in the nation. So, you know, we learned those FDA standards. In fact, we even made some of them stricter.
That's so good though. I think it's better to have learned the toughest regulation to go consume. Right? It's like you got schooled in it. So you're like, if you can pass this, you're probably going to be able to be successful. Because I think what's hard is if you have multi MSOs, multi-state operators, navigating the different regulation, especially when it's OSHA, all of that, that's got to be really difficult, because each state might have a different health department, and just knowing those nuances, is that a challenge? I can't imagine. Like, I'm just thinking of like how I would, if I had to do that, like how I would manage it. It would be like through crazy project management software just to keep attuned to all of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really depends on the state and county and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So you have a local health department that's your county health department. And then you have your state health department and then there's FDA. Yeah. But food safety is food safety is food safety. So if you know, their regulations may be a little bit different, but if you're following like the FDA regulations, or if you're like GMP certified or something like that, that really puts you that leg up. That's why we're trying to really push the, like, get a CAPA plan, get a GMP certification, because if you can do that, there might be small things that the local jurisdiction might want you to change because of certain things in their county. You know, different places have different issues, mold or, you know, water in the facility. I mean, there are so many different things that every different area has issues that they have to address. But for the most part, you're not going to be shut down and you're not going to be fined. And that's really what people care about, especially when investors are looking to buy a place or put money into a place. You know, that's a huge liability is if you're not compliant with those regulations, because once it becomes federally legal, you could just get shut down and then they lose all their money. So getting to that point is so important. And that's why we're like, well, we might as well do GMP certification, because you know it is something that will really, really help this industry. Yeah. And we haven't had anybody do a THC one yet, which is kind of funny, but they are, you know, they're regulated and they feel like if their local health department doesn't regulate, they don't need to follow it. And they don't, you know, and it's really interesting. Whereas the hemp side is seeing that these regulations are coming very soon. Sometimes, sorry, it just felt like a dog run by. I don't know if it's my dog or not. Anyways.
Okay. Do you need to change?
No, you're good. But yeah, so it's, you know, it really just kind of depends on which county and state you're in. But at the same time, like I said, if you're following those higher end regulations, if you're, you know, up to date with GMP and all of that, then you should be okay no matter what. You know, jurisdiction walks in your door. Well,
you mentioned that, you know, you could only start like certifying GMP 6-7 months ago. Was that because of the FDA or what why now? Cause I always thought it was always.
No. In fact, it was very strict. No cannabis policy for a very long time. Because it's not federally regulated and GMP certification isn't done by the FDA. So it's based on the FDA regulations, but the FDA, and this is another thing, if you see on a website, FDA certified, that is complete BS. The FDA is a government agency. They do not certify anything.
Just like the governments can't consult. Like there's no certification. Exactly. Okay. That's exactly. Everyone needs to underscore that. That's really important. Okay.
Yes. So that is like my biggest like BS flag that I see on the internet. I'm like, oh, FDA is... Yeah, or a local health department, you know, people in Colorado, CDPHE certified. No, they don't do that. They come in and just see your facility. Like, it's so funny. The government is not allowed to certify. So ANSI, who is a big accreditation body, said, you know, we should have some kind of standards that people can go by that's like FDA, you know, kind of FDA regulations, but a certification. And so they came up with the GMP standards. And that's where that came from. And so there are accredited certifying bodies that will do this. They're all private companies for profit that will do this. But it's very, very hard to become accredited, right? And it's you have to really abide by these like really high standards. So all of your auditors have to be audited themselves very frequently,
like and things like and all that stuff. Wow. I mean, it makes sense though, because if you're certifying like the gold standard, you better have a team that gets their stuff and does it well.
And because of ethical reasons, you know, certifying bodies can't be consultants. They can only consult to a certain degree or things like that. So the consultant and certifying body like marriage, if you will, has been around for hundreds of years. Yeah. And we just happened to be the ones that were in cannabis at first. Yeah. So we actually went to several of these accredited certifying bodies and essentially drove them insane with emails and calls trying to get them to allow this in the industry. And eventually one of them broke down. And then once that one broke down, then several others followed suit because they saw, oh wait, this might be an opportunity. So it was pretty quickly. We went from one certifying body to four certifying bodies in like 8 months. So it was really nice.
That's so good. I mean, just the fact that you're quite resilient. I mean, do you think that it's your personality that just doesn't let it, like, we're not going to hear no for an answer? The fact that you kind of know that how working with governments is like that, a lot of people might have just been like, you know what? We got to know. Let's just continue with this other path that we know is making us money, but you fought ahead. Like, what was it that made you, like, what is that characteristic in you?
I mean, I don't know. I think that I just hate, so normalization is my whole thing. cannabis should be treated just like every other manufacturing in the entire world. It is no different. In fact, Company Week, which is a magazine that's really big in manufacturing, you know, they started having a cannabis award now, which is just incredible. And I get to present it every year. I'm so excited about it. This is our second year.
That's so
cool. Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm 100% about normalization. We should not be treated any differently than any other manufacturing in the entire world. It's super annoying that there are things that are available for, you know, still meals and you know, food production that isn't available to us. And having that GMP was another way of normalizing us and making us look like a legit, you know, industry, because we are. We're making money. I'm sure we can't bank. Annoying. Eventually that will happen. But yeah, I mean, even with this like PPP program for the coronavirus thing, cannabis companies don't apply to that. So no. Any business, yeah.
That's awful. It's because it's a Schedule I substance. To me, that is the most frustrating thing right now, because it's been recognized as an essential good. And it's year-on-year growth. We don't see anybody die from cannabis yet, thanks to, you know, enforcers and the fact that cannabis doesn't kill. And it's so frustrating, because it hurts and cripples these businesses to a punitive measure because of 280E. I mean, the scheduling is, right. You know, I always just think about it from 280E. I was curious if maybe because it's still federally illegal, the cannabis businesses aren't looking to do the GMP certification because they just can't afford it, because they don't have the cash flow like a CBD business has. Like, what do you think? Okay. That was in my mind, my hypothesis.
That's entirely possible. Okay. It is entirely possible. But 280E still applies to CBD companies.
No,
so
it doesn't.
It doesn't at all now? No. I don't know anything.
Yeah. Oh. I'm a CPA, right? So 280E.
Perfect.
If you're trafficking in a controlled substance, a Schedule One or a Two, you can't deduct anything. You can't deduct anything, right? And then there was tax cases that set precedent, like CHAMP and Olive V. Commissioner, that now allows the businesses to deduct cost of goods sold, right?
Okay.
But that's a deduction of the gross receipts. And when CBD was removed from the Controlled Substance Act, that's when cannabis businesses CBD businesses were allowed to deduct. And at the state level, you know, businesses usually like in Oregon and Colorado and even in California, if they're set up correctly, they can get their business deductions. Thank God.
But I was not aware of that. I don't do financial compliance at all.
That's why I'm so glad to get you on the show. But, you know, think about that impact. It's just, it makes me so upset, especially right now with COVID. And, you know, I am curious, before we start the speed round, kind of your thoughts on what businesses really should be thinking about in this time, because, you know, I'm always numbers focused. So I've been thinking, they have to manage their cash flow. And then I've been talking to experts along the supply chain, and I'm understanding that like things are just dwindling and the whole supply chain is now shifting. And so managing cash flow is a lot harder right now because labs aren't working right, like there's not enough inventory. And so like you just see all of these different ramifications that are happening to these businesses. And hopefully within the next few months, I don't think they're ever going to go back to how they used to be in any industry, but we'll get back to operations. But what kind of insight can you provide cannabis businesses, or any business if they're listening to this, what they should be thinking about during COVID, and any tips that you can provide them?
Well, it's a hard one, because, you know, we're keeping our clients are great. And, I think they are seeing this. And in fact, we've even had a couple of new clients come on since this has happened, which I was not expecting at all. Yeah. I think it's just because, a lot of what we can do is remote. You know, we don't have to be on site. We actually are offering, like virtual audits. So you can take your phone around with Skype or whatever and do an audit. You know, that's entirely possible. We used to do it for people in different states that couldn't afford to fly us out and things like that, because why not? You know, we have the technology, why not use it? And you know, I think a lot of consulting companies like ours are also doing some discounted things as well. You know, we are recognizing that people are going through a hard time. They may need these things, like THC companies in Colorado, perfect example, they have to have a CAPA plan in place with all supporting documents by the first of next year. And I don't think people are remembering this, and it's going to get down to the wire. So we're actually doing like a 50% discount off of our CAPA plans, and we can do them fully remote. So there are still ways that, you know, you can do things and get something done for hopefully, you know, a lesser price than you'll pay, you know, a month before it's due, which is always what happens, you know, people drag it out. So, you know, I think that just hanging in there, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm not a financial person at all. I'm hoping that people, you know, have saved enough to hold themselves over. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that the PPP program does not apply. You know, we're essential and can stay open, but we can't like get any money from the federal government, you know, and it's kind of sad. Even if you're a plumber or a lawyer or anything like that, it works with the cannabis industry. You can't get it.
Oh, so, as a delivery provider, you can't get it?
Yeah, I actually tried to apply, but just to see, because I was like, oh, I'm probably going to get shut down. Sure enough, they went to my website right away. And of course, I'm like, I am a cannabis company. Oh, absolutely. And they shut that down real quick. Because I was like, I just want to see, like, if they would actually, you know, do it.
Allow it. And, well, bankruptcy is the same, though. I mean, like, when you think about the impact, I mean, I remember when I sold my first book, and it was nothing. Like, it was like $19.99. Like, it was about 280E and all that stuff. And my Stripe got shut down. And my whole website wasn't fully focused on cannabis, because I don't just focus on cannabis. And
right. It's
frustrating, but I didn't. I mean, now that makes sense, but it's, oh God, that's really hard. Do you think this could be an opportunity to have a conversation with the federal government at a bigger level right now? Because, you know, I mean, this whole year is just wacky. I mean, it's an election year. There's obviously a freaking pandemic. People are afraid. There's like unemployment, all this stuff. And I think you already mentioned a really good thing is like you have to continue to kind of adapt and innovate. But I'm curious if this could be an opportunity for the cannabis industry to do something at the federal level to change something.
I'm hoping.
Okay.
You know, the only issue that I'm seeing is that 90% of THC companies that I have visited, you know, in Denver, you know, they're very strict there. So I feel like the people in the Denver County, they feel like they're being victimized, but really they've got a huge leg up on everyone else because their health department has been in there. And they're used to those regulations. But most states and counties, they are not ready. And I think that federal legalization, I keep saying, like, just give me a little longer on federal legalization, because I want to get into more facilities and help more people so that less and less of us, you know, disappear. But this is, you know, with the amount of people who are employed by the cannabis industry, mm-hmm. if those cannabis companies go out of business, mm-hmm. that's a lot of jobs that are going to have to be on unemployment and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a huge awakening. Like, if they would have given these loans to these small businesses, because most of the cannabis companies in the nation are under 500 employees. So they would have qualified perfectly for this. And, you know, could have kept some workers and, you know, they didn't have to lay off their entire staff like many have to do right now. And it's just, you know, I think it might be an eye-opening situation. What I'm hoping is some lobbyists and lawyers start getting together and talking. And if they need an expert witness, please let me know. But it's just, you know, I think it's just a matter of if we want to get the ball rolling, I think this is a good point to do so. Yeah. You know, and it's going to happen eventually, no matter what. I mean, Pandora's box, right? You can't put it back in. You can't get rid of cannabis now.
No.
Too many people rely on it for their livelihood. I mean, if cannabis became illegal tomorrow, I have no idea what I would do. I certainly wouldn't be working for the government again.
No, I think it's a matter of when, not if. And so I like that. I think that everybody listening, I think we should start some form of a mastermind and like really kind of get this discussion going, because I don't know. It would be interesting to see kind of what momentum could happen with it. and we'd have to have your tenacity of, because you're going to hear no, right? Like, I lobbied in DC a few years ago and it was so great, but it was so political. It was so obvious. Oh, we want to support it, but we can't, you know? And I think that was the most frustrating thing. Are you ready for the speed round?
Okay, sure.
I love to drama.
You know what that is.
Okay, so what's one piece of advice that you would give somebody just getting into the cannabis industry?
Oh, probably start getting compliant right away so you don't have to break bad habits down the line.
Woo!
Because that is a big deal. Yeah.
Yes. What is your why? You know, when we think about, I asked you about your vision, when you think about why you get up every day, what you do, and what motivates you, what is your why?
You know, it's in my personality just to help people. And the cannabis industry just happens to be filled with a lot of awesome people. And every single day I know that my clients are taken care of and they're happy to have me there. And, you know, that's my why. I love my cannabis family, because most of my clients are my friends now, you know, it's like they're my, you know, we treat them like family. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's my why. As long as they're doing okay, we're doing okay. So, you know.
Everyone in the cannabis industry that, you know, that 90% are such good-hearted, creative, you know, heart-driven entrepreneurs that really got in this to change the world. And so it's
well, and it's giving a chance to people who normally wouldn't have this chance to live the American dream, to actually be able to do what, you know, we've been talking about for years and years and years, you know, starting a business and being successful and having their, you know, doing something they love that, you know, is actually, I don't know. I love it. I think it's great. And I think that everyone that's involved deserves that American dream. And, you know, the government is a hard pill to swallow sometimes. And so we just help them with that, you know, a little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down a little bit. So yeah. we try very hard. Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, what do you think cannabis will look like when it's federally legal?
Ugh, that's a hard, I think that a lot of things are going to change. Mm-hmm. It's going to be much more regulated, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you know, it'll look a lot like wholesale food manufacturing or supplement manufacturing. The FDA hasn't really decided which way they want to go. And to tell you the truth, the regulations aren't that different. So there's a few variances. And then, like I said, I think they're going to take existing regulations, same with OSHA, mm-hmm. existing regulations, apply it to the industry. And then there's going to be some nuances that they'll have to follow that other industries maybe don't have to follow, like testing standards and things like that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to look a lot like wholesale food manufacturing. At least I hope it does. I hope they don't make it all pharmaceutical because that would eliminate most of the people in the industry because that's a little harder. You have to get a different kind of license and it's just like a whole thing. Oh, but I don't think so. The FDA, you know, I've talked to them before and I don't think that it's going to go that way. At least I hope not. So.
Okay, good. All right, Kim, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. Like, I think that schooled me a little bit in some of the compliance stuff, and I'm really happy you did. And you provided.
You schooled me in the finance stuff, so that's what I need you for.
Of course. Well, thank you so much. And, you know, I know you are part of the community, but how can listeners, if they're not part of Cannabis Business Minds community, how can they find more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, so we have a huge LinkedIn following. So if you just look at Kim Stuck, on LinkedIn, you'll find me. Also, you can always reach out directly at Kim, K-I-M, period, Stuck, S-T-U-C-K, at Allay, A-L-L-A-Y, consulting.com. Or you can visit our website at www.allayconsulting.com. We're there and we can answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Cannabis Business Minds. You know, if you like what you heard, please leave us a 5-star review anywhere that you listen to podcasts. If you have questions, if you have ideas for podcasts or things that you want to hear more about, shoot us an email at podcast@cannabisbusinessminds.com or shoot us a direct message on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. This podcast was produced by Simone Smooth Horizons, and the music is by Ketsa Cultural Productions.